Hello, you're listening to Romeo And, a podcast about masculinities, nice guys, sexism, and what it means to be a man in our society today. I'm your host, Street Saint. Hey everybody, thanks for listening. Before I go on with the show, I just want to quickly let all of you know how beautiful you all are. Wow, it's hard to do it, even when I can't see you. I do actually sincerely believe you are all beautiful people. However, it's difficult for me to say it. It's difficult for me to give compliments in general. Why is that? It's because I was raised a man. And I'm about to open a whole big can of worms right now, so bear with me. First off, let me just explain my logic on this one. Why don't I give compliments? Well, when I was young and I was learning about sex differences and inequality and feminism, I was told that giving women unsolicited compliments was degrading. You know, like catcalling. Saying, hey, beautiful, and whatnot. And I was told that it made women feel as though their only positive contribution to the world were their looks. And I didn't want to be the asshole who contributed to this, so I held my tongue when I saw a woman I found attractive. I figured, she hears about how beautiful she is all the time. The last thing she wants is some dude to randomly compliment her, so I'll say something else, or I'll keep my mouth shut. And since I didn't have anything else to talk about with women other than what was immediately apparent, which was their physical appearance, I just didn't say anything to women. Ever. And I didn't really recognize how seriously this avoidance of compliments affected me until I saw some Facebook campaign, something like, tell the people you love they're beautiful, or something along those lines. Basically, it suggested that throughout the day, you should tell the people you care about, especially if they don't know how much they mean to you, that they're beautiful. And I thought it sounded like a cool idea, so I figured I would do it. Until I realized that I literally just couldn't. It was like when I was trying to remind myself how to cry. The action just felt so foreign to me, and dirty, and awful. Telling someone I didn't know very well that they were beautiful was somehow terrifying to me. And so I thought, okay, that makes sense. Why don't I just tell the people that I know really well? Couldn't do it. And this is probably just a personal problem, but the thing about personal problems is that you're never truly alone. And I know there are countless others out there who have the same phobia I do. That said, I can't talk about this unless I look at the feminist side of things. Catcalling is a serious, widespread, and complicated issue. Yeah, it sucks that guys have to feel uncomfortable about giving women unsolicited compliments, but that's kinda just where we are right now. Women have to deal with way more crap than just being told they're pretty, so the less I can contribute to that, I figure, the better. Even if it means playing it safe and just saying nothing at all. But then, when I talk to women about this catch-22, they try to reassure me. They say, oh, Eric, you're a great guy, you're nice and respectful, and some girl is gonna be lucky to have you, and all that bullshit. And they tell me that I should totally compliment women. They say that it's so lovely to hear nice things from a guy who isn't some sleazeball. And that I have nothing to worry about, being who I am. Okay, but then the few times I've actually attempted to take this advice have backfired marvelously. Okay, not every time, but I don't give compliments that often, like I said, so when I do, I can't help but scrutinize the reaction that I get. which is often a long, uncomfortable pause followed by a change of subject. In the best cases. In the worst cases, I get a creeper alert shudder of discomfort, and then she either changes the subject, walks away quickly, or just never speaks to me again. And now, part of this is because women are messed up by the system too. Female comedians often joke about how women don't know how to accept compliments, and how they make some excuse about how they look, or say something they find really ugly about themselves. But then, this is not an attribute unique to women. I, for one, am exactly the same way. More notably, women are also taught that all men are trying to get into your pants, so be skeptical about any guy who finds you attractive. And women have to fear that some dude is going to sexually assault her because compliments on physical appearance almost always are the precursor to sexual violence. Obviously, saying, "You look really pretty," is not code for, "I'm going to rape you now," but most instances of rape come directly after a statement resembling, "You look really pretty." I shared a video on my Facebook page about a high school photographer named Shay Glover, who did a project where she took photos of things she found beautiful. And when she told the people she photographed that she thought they were beautiful, they all smiled and blushed and felt all flattered and stuff. And it made me stop and think for a moment. Because if Shay, the photographer, were a guy, would she have gotten the same reaction from people? The answer is probably, but it depends. As a woman, the response is almost always going to be positive because we don't assume women are sexual predators. We just don't. However, as a man, in order to be able to compliment someone like this, you have to make sure you do it right. Because if you don't look a certain way, or carry yourself a certain way, or say it in a certain way, then you'll most likely be seen as a creeper. A creeper with a camera who's going to do God knows what with whatever photos he takes. As a man, this sucks. I hate how often I'm assumed to be dangerous. I hate that I'm essentially guilty until proven innocent when it comes to sexual deviance. But the thing that men, and most especially men's rights activists, need to learn is that there's a reason for that. There is a reason women are weary of men, and men who compliment them, because one out of every five women has been the victim of some kind of sexual harassment or assault. And no, those aren't made up or conflated numbers. If you don't believe it, talk to the women you know about their lives, and you might be surprised about what they have to say. Or maybe you won't, because sexual assault is a sensitive topic, and most people don't want to talk about it with anyone. So don't expect people to openly share all of their sexual assault experiences. But even if the numbers are completely made up, the fear of sexual assault is real and justified. And so, there's nothing wrong with being a little nervous around a guy who randomly throws you a compliment about your looks. That said, I've had people cross the street in order to avoid sharing a sidewalk with me. Not because I'm male, but because I am a black male. That also sucks. It makes me feel awful and less than human, but that's also the reality we live in. Because as much as I can say how nice and polite and nonviolent I am as a person, I'm not a pretty white woman. As a black man, I hear stories about police officers shooting innocent and unarmed people who look like me, with no consequences. As a woman, I would probably hear more about the people who get kidnapped, raped, and/or murdered when they were a little too trusting of the suspicious-looking dude in the hoodie walking alongside them. Should we really be worried about these things happening to us? Do they really happen as frequently as everyone says? Ultimately, it doesn't really matter, because the stories, or rather, cautionary tales, are out there, and we're told about them over and over and over again. And whatever you happen to look like is going to determine what stories you hear. If you're a black man, you're going to hear about the police brutality against black men. If you're a white woman, then you're going to hear about the sexual assault that happens to white women. If you're a white man, then you might not hear about anything. And the thing about it is, you have to take these stories seriously. You have to, because, I mean, the fact of the matter is, most people would happily choose to be the insensitive jerk who's overly superstitious, rather than the statistic who's killed or has PTSD from ignoring the warning signs. So, is Street Saint actually telling us to profile people? Well, kinda, yeah, I am. Because, as the age-old saying goes, better safe than sorry. Now, there's a difference between being racist or sexist or otherwise insensitive versus protecting yourself. If you're calling the police because you see a black man walking towards you on the sidewalk, then you're doing it wrong. But if you feel uncomfortable and decide to cross the street, I mean, it sucks that you feel that way, but I get it. Better safe than sorry. If you decide to carry pepper spray on you, or if you put your keys in between your knuckles when you see some dude walking towards you when you're alone at night, I get it. Better safe than sorry. But if you kick a guy in the balls and run away when he tells you you look pretty tonight, then you're doing it wrong. And an easy way to tell the difference is to remember the mantra, better safe than sorry, versus innocent until proven guilty. There's nothing wrong with preparing for the worst case scenario, so long as you're not putting those plans into action before you have any damning evidence. Again, these things are complicated and sad, and it sucks that we even have to talk about it at all. But it is what it is. Ignoring reality doesn't make you a hero. A hero ain't nothing but a sandwich. More often than not, ignoring the realities that we live in is what's going to put you in danger. And in the worst cases, it turns your life into a statistic, which also sucks. So don't judge a book by its cover. Well, do, but, you know, do it in moderation. Judge responsibly, kids. This week on the show, I've got another story to share with you all. That's coming up next here on Romeo And. Alright, boys and girls, and all other identifying peoples, we're down to the final stretch here. Season 2 of Romeo And is about to come to a close, and I couldn't be happier with what's already been accomplished this year. Well, I mean, I guess I could be happier, you know, if we had like 50 million subscribers or something. But whatever. Anyway, the important thing is that the show is coming along way better and way faster than I've ever expected. So thank you all for continuing to listen in and join me on this adventure. And quickly, I apologize for, I've been watching some Netflix and yelling at my computer screen, so I may or may not have lost my voice a little bit, so I'm just gonna power through here, so bear with me. But anyway, today I'm going to share with you another failed romance story. And maybe you're getting sick of hearing about all the times I've made an ass of myself trying to get into a relationship. To be honest, I'm right there with you. After everything I've been through and all the learning I've done just from doing this podcast alone, I'm pretty much ready to put all this behind me. But I already wrote the story, and I had no other content planned for the rest of the season, so I'm sharing it anyway. The whole point of the podcast was for me to share stories of men doing man things, and me talking about how narrow-minded us guys are brought up to be. It ended up being a lot of me just airing out dirty laundry, and so this will probably be the last time I share a long-form story like this on the show. At least for a while. And that's partly because I want to switch gears and talk about things other than failed relationships, and partly because I'm excited to start sharing more of your stories. And also because digging up the past is hard and exhausting and mildly depressing. I mean, if you're really in love with these stories, certainly let me know and I can keep doing them. I've actually been saving some of the juicier ones. But I'm also in the works of putting them out there in a separate format, so you guys can listen to them as you want to, and so I can focus this podcast on other things. All that is to say that the next season of the show is going to be tighter, smoother, better oiled, and on fleek. But I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, so let's go ahead and get to the story. If you're into reading rather than listening, or if you want to do both, go to www.stsaint.com/podcast and check out episode 2.20. You'll find show notes as well as a link to the readable version of the story. You have to be logged in to read it, but signing up is free and easy, and instructions are right there on the site. But without further ado, the story is entitled My Spiritual Awakening. Despite all my years of desperately trying and failing to charm women, I never quite understood the age-old advice to be yourself. Because I never really gave much thought as to who that person was. However, after going to college and quote-unquote finding God in my own way, I started to understand that simply doing what I thought I was supposed to do was not the same as doing what made sense to me. When I applied for college, I did what was most convenient. My major would be writing, because I used to do a lot of it. Plus, I was in a special writing program in high school. The university in which I chose to enroll would be the one that gave me the most financial aid. I would take the classes I was required to take in order to complete my degree. There was a reason for everything, and I simply went with the flow. I wasn't sure that I was capable of making my own decisions. Anytime I was given a tough decision to make, I would simply defer to someone else, or think about what was the easiest or most practical. It didn't matter so long as I didn't have to think about what I actually wanted. Because the fact of the matter was, I didn't know what I wanted. I thought I did, but I never really had to do any serious thinking about it. The answers always seemed pretty cut and dry. That is, until I actually began my first year of college. I was living in a big city for the first time in my life. I had options. I could join clubs, I could go out with friends, I could stay in bed and be a bookworm. Suddenly, I had to make a decision about who I wanted to be as a person. Needless to say, I was incredibly overwhelmed. Surprisingly, I managed to skate through my first semester doing what I had always done, the bare minimum. But it was evident to me that I would be wasting my college years if I kept this up. I needed to do some soul searching. Although, I was never a religious person. I actually begged my mom not to take me to church when I was a kid. It may have been the only thing I did have an opinion about. But for whatever reason, I decided that I wanted to add religion back into my life. But this time, I wanted to do so on my own terms. My family was Christian, so I was already familiar with that path, and I knew definitively that it wasn't for me. If I were to join a religion, it would have to encompass all the virtues I felt were important in my life. At the same time, the community had to be as open and tolerant of the world as I was. I wasn't sure that this religion even existed. So I took some time to research other religions around the world. I knew I didn't want to worship a deity, since I didn't believe there was some divine being watching over us, which is the primary reason I left Christianity. This qualification was extremely helpful in narrowing my options. I considered Buddhism and Taoism. I liked the teachings, but they were a bit too cerebral for me. Again, they didn't seem to align closely enough to how I wanted to live my life. And just when I was about ready to declare that no such religion existed in the world that catered to my belief system, I came across Unitarian Universalism. The title seemed intriguing to me, albeit a bit lengthy, and so I looked up all the information I could find on it. Unitarian Universalists had no Bible or deity. Instead, they believed in seven principles, which essentially came down to be just and compassionate towards all people and things, and find your own spiritual path, whatever that may be. On paper, it perfectly reflected my personal belief, to do what makes you happy without being a terrible person to anyone else. I knew that if there were any religion I would call my own, it would have to be this one. But before I could, I had to experience Unitarian Universalism firsthand. When I returned to school, I looked for local Unitarian Universalist churches in the area. To my amazement, I found one that was merely a few blocks away from campus. Not only that, but the church was hosting a young adult weekend retreat for people exactly my age. Fate is another spiritual idea I don't believe in, but even I could tell divine intervention when I saw it. I was not the kind of person to make spontaneous decisions. I had never been to this church before, nor met any of the people who were supposedly going to this event. I had never even known this religion existed for more than a few weeks. Nevertheless, I signed up for the weekend-long commitment, just hoping in my heart that I wouldn't regret it. I figured I had to start making decisions for myself sooner or later. So, that weekend, I packed up my sleeping bag and some clean clothes and walked to the church. In the back of my mind, I feared that, upon arrival, I would be greeted by some hooded occult members. Luckily, that was not the case, and instead, I was greeted with bright, warm smiles. Just minutes after checking in and dropping off all my stuff, someone in the kitchen asked if they could have a few hands to help with food. I still hadn't met anyone at the event other than the registration staff, and I wanted something to keep me busy so I wouldn't end up standing awkwardly in a corner somewhere. I immediately rushed over to the kitchen to see what they needed. The head of the kitchen staff asked if I could help making the hummus dip for people to snack on in between meals. I said I didn't know much about hummus, but she told me all I needed to do was mash up some chickpeas. Sounded easy enough. So, shortly thereafter, I was paired up with another girl at the event who introduced herself as Yolanda. The two of us became chickpea-smashing buddies, and I remember thinking that she was incredibly pretty. She had short blonde hair, a slim but built frame, and a silver ring through her nostril. I thought she had an adorable laugh, and I loved the way she scrunched up her face when she smiled. I had been a Unitarian Universalist for no more than 5 minutes, and I already had a crush on a girl at church. Typical. Through our conversations, I found out that Yolanda was visiting from Western Massachusetts, where she was going to school. She was an avid biker and spent a lot of time racing and touring, which explained her noticeably muscular thighs. For the remainder of the weekend, I continued to meet other Unitarian Universalists who would become some of my closest friends during my college years and beyond. I had never felt so closely connected to a group of people in my life, despite it being my first time at a UU church, at a UU event, or meeting a UU-identified person. One thing was absolutely certain to me by the end of the event. I had found my people. And to top everything off, I had also found Yolanda, who I assumed, because of all the other divine signs I had been getting all weekend, would be my future wife. Nevertheless, I got the sense that I might be wasting my time with Yolanda. We did seem to have a lot in common. Conversation was easy with her, and I felt a strong connection between us, but she still seemed somewhat distant to me. Not that she didn't like me, but I suspected that her interest in me was not nearly as deep as mine was for her. And so I settled on the idea that we would remain friends. We exchanged contact information, and she said she would get in touch with me the next time she was in the area. We kept in touch via Facebook throughout the following weeks, but for the most part, I started to move on. I started to go to the church on a regular basis, and kept up with the friends I met during the weekend conference. Yolanda slowly began to fade to the recesses of my mind. However, a few months later, winter became spring, and unexpectedly, I received a new message from Yolanda. She said that she would be in Boston for a few days and that she would love to see me. She asked to get together, hang out in the city, and maybe stay at my place for the night. Now, if Yolanda were a guy, or if I wasn't at all interested in her, I might have taken this as an invitation to get together, reconnect, and hang out. But Yolanda wasn't some guy friend I wasn't attracted to. She was a girl, and I found her attractive, and I wanted to date her. And so I read her message as an admission of a deep-seated love she had for me. To me, there was no other possible interpretation. Yolanda was just as interested in me as I wanted her to be, and so she wanted to spend the whole day with me in the city. After all, she could have just as easily stayed with any number of the other friends we met at the church event. I wanted to believe Yolanda was in love with me, and so it was all I was able to see. Even after Yolanda sent me a follow-up message, which essentially read that she didn't want me to get the wrong impression, and that this was just a friendly get-together. Somehow, I thought this message was just her being coy with me, or something. I spent the next few weeks eagerly anticipating her arrival. I took great pains to choose the best sites for us to see in the city, mapping out a walking path and creating an itinerary complete with an agenda and estimated times of arrival and departure. I wanted to make sure the entire day was perfectly structured so she would thoroughly enjoy herself with me and see that I was great boyfriend material. When Yolanda eventually arrived, everything went almost exactly as planned. She dropped her stuff off in my dorm room, I gave her a quick tour of the campus, and then we were off exploring the city. We walked down to the harbor, through the marketplace, and then back downtown to the Prudential Mall. In retrospect, I realized that I packed in a whole lot of walking into the tour. Yolanda seemed pleased, but also exhausted. I didn't choose a place to do dinner because Yolanda had mentioned she had a place in mind. It seemed like a hole-in-the-wall kind of place, and I had never heard of it myself. The reason became very clear when we sat down to order. The cuisine was 5-star. When the food came out, it was garnished in such a way that I had only ever seen done in movies and the Food Network. I ordered the cheapest thing on the menu, which I'm pretty sure was an appetizer, but it was the most delicious thing I had ever tasted. I had no idea Yolanda was a foodie. Makes for great wife material, I suspected. After our adventure in the city, Yolanda and I retreated back to my dorm room. I had talked at length about Yolanda and my expected rendezvous with my roommate Jacob, and out of courtesy, he told me he would stay with another friend of his for the night. I told him it was unnecessary since Yolanda was perfectly happy sleeping on the floor, and plus, I highly doubted the two of us would end up getting physical, given my propensity for screwing up relationships. But he insisted on giving us space, just to be sure he didn't cock-block me unwittingly. And so Yolanda and I watched Mean Girls alone on the couch together. Yolanda, who fell asleep partway through the movie, exhausted from all the walking, indicated to me after it was over that it was probably bedtime. I reminded Yolanda that my roommate had courteously offered the use of his bed that night, which he had made up nicely, but Yolanda once again declined. She laid out her sleeping bag and began to make herself comfortable on the floor. As these preparations were being made, Alan, one of the other guys living in the suite with me, casually strolled past, and then backpedaled back to the threshold of my room. Alan and I hardly spoke at all, despite living together for several months. However, his testosterone radar went off wildly when he sensed a female body in the vicinity.
"Hey, how you doing?"
he asked as Yolanda spread out her sleeping bag.
"I'm Eric's sweetmate, Alan."
Yolanda peered up at him and smiled politely. "Hi, Alan. Yolanda. Nice to meet you."
"You as well,"
Alan continued. I narrowed my eyes and rolled them to the back of my head. I wanted to slam the door in his face.
"Hey, well, you let me know if you need anything. I'm just one room over," said Alan.
"Thanks," replied Yolanda. And with that, he was back on his way. I did not allow myself to get upset, and instead attempted to dispel the discomfort I felt by offering Yolanda some water from the kitchen. She said no thanks. The rest of the night was just as uneventful as I expected. I couldn't shake the awkward feeling of having a girl sleep on the floor in my room while there were two perfectly good beds to use, one of which I was using myself, and had room for two. But other than that, I slept just fine, and prepared to say my goodbyes to Yolanda in the morning. After packing up her things, I escorted her downstairs where she met up with her mother, with whom she would be attending another event in the city. I told her it was lovely seeing her again, and she said likewise, and then she was gone. Ultimately, it turned out to be a pleasant reunion with a good friend. However, my heart sank at the thought that perhaps I missed the opportunity for something more. Yolanda made it clear to me that her staying with me was purely platonic, but I kept telling myself that she was being facetious, that this was just code for, "I'm actually really interested in you." Yolanda emailed me a few days after our day-long rendezvous to once again thank me for a great time. She added that she was grateful I didn't put any unwanted pressure on her, because when she had done this with guys in the past, they would often take it the wrong way and try to make the thing into a date. "Thanks for not making this a date," she said. Reading this message was painful. It was painful because I knew I wanted to be that guy. I wanted to make our meeting into a date. Then it was painful because she indicated that my best efforts at a romantic day together in no way resembled anything more than a friendly get-together. And it hurt to know that the fact that she was so happy I didn't try and hit on her made me once again think that perhaps now she would be open to dating me. I felt like a fraud. I felt like a terrible friend. And a terrible boyfriend. I felt ashamed of myself. I knew from the get-go that it would probably never work out between Yolanda and I, but I let my heart convince my brain that it was meant to be, as if my meeting her at church was indeed a sign from a higher power. I must have temporarily forgotten that I don't believe in a god. I remember calling my mom and venting my sadness to her, thinking that perhaps I made some terrible mistake somewhere along the line. Maybe I was being irrational. Maybe I was being ignorant. Maybe I was just dumb. But I still remember my resulting anxiety attack when I knew it was never going to happen between us. During my college years, I learned a lot of important lessons about myself. I learned that being yourself is not the same as going with the flow. I learned that sometimes you have to make big decisions, and they're not always ideal or popular or ultimately the right decisions, but you have to stick by them just the same. Unfortunately, the one lesson I refuse to learn is that regardless of the decisions you make and the efforts you put in, you can never steer someone else's decision-making. You can make a case for yourself, but you can't make them fall in love with you or your ideas. Try as you might, your horse just may not drink, regardless of how many watering holes you lead it to. My spiritual journey led me to Unitarian Universalism, and it was perhaps one of the best decisions of my life. However, this was not the end of my journey. It was merely a turning point. And my future success will depend on my ability to recall the important lessons I've learned along the way. The story ends there. I hope you enjoyed it. Like I said, this will probably be the last long-form story I do in a while. In the future, expect more shorts, excerpts, and, of course, stories from you, my wonderful listeners. Only 2 more episodes this season, and then we'll be back in February for season 3. I can't tell you how excited I am. But before I go, just a friendly reminder to send me any thoughts you have about this week's story. Get them to me quick so I can add them to the things I talk about next week when I break down the story and talk about what we can learn from it. But until then, that's it for this episode of Romeo And. As always, if you have a story you want featured on the podcast, send me a message via email, contact@stsaint.com, or give me a call, 516-514-7878. Also, be sure to follow me on social media. Like Romeo And on Facebook, or follow me on Twitter @street_saint. New episodes of Romeo And are published weekly, so make sure you get every episode when it's released by subscribing to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, or the podcatcher of your choice. But if you do nothing else, just go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating. There's nothing more valuable for the show than getting a bunch of great ratings from all you guys. Thanks again for listening. I am Street Saint, and I'll see you next time.